This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks, live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts. I'm the CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on treasury, operation, and risk. Our topic today is entitled Redefining Stress Resilience in Banking. Very topical subject, I think you'll all agree. So welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone can ask us a question from the audience whenever you want. We can ask them as we run through, post them in the comment sections on the right hand side of your screen. If we get a few, we can answer them at the end or after the podcast. If you do ask a question, please let us know ideally who you are and if you possibly can, your role, so we can put the answer in some context. Also, thanks everyone today who has or previously asked to be part of a podcast in the future. If you do want to be part of one, just email Nick Appleby or Adam Pemberton from Planix, who your emails will see in the comments section in a second, and you can be part of a future podcast and we can make that happen. Now, today I'm joined by our guest speaker, Mark Crowhurst from Baringa. Mark, good afternoon. Would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and a little bit about what you do?
I will indeed. Good afternoon, and good afternoon, everybody else. I'm Mark Crowhurst. I work at Baringa. I've been in the industry for kind of 32 years, financial services, primarily in the world of treasury, liquidity and cash. I mean, I worked across banking. I used to work for Bankers Trust, JP Morgan, and a bunch of other places. And most of my time has been spent really focused on treasury, liquidity, and those kind of issues across banks, insurers, and asset managers. And it's great to be talking about it today.
Perfect. Thanks, Mark. Now then, I think I'm going to regret this, but let's briefly talk about football, because I ask all my guests to briefly tell us if you have a team and your allegiances. But I'm not sure I'm going to like this answer. But I will, in the spirit of asking everyone, I will ask you.
See, my allegiance is Arsenal. My granddad was an Arsenal fan. You know, he travelled to Highbury with Jimmy the Butcher. I remember it well, going up to see him when I was a kid. But, you know, I have inherited his love of Arsenal. And at the moment, I'm a happy person.
And I'm just looking at the back of on your, just behind your head. Yes. What is that? That's a gnome.
That is my Arsenal gnome.
A present for my children. To all the audience, I knew about this, so not to be outdone, I went into my garden.
And, about there.
Yeah, I took my LFC gnome, there you go, Liverpool gnome, and an England gnome as well. So we can all do that. They're not personally mine, just so as we all understand. I find them in the next door neighbour's garden. Anyway, when we were talking earlier, Mark, you mentioned the topic today relating to some of the comments you made on the Smart Treasury webinar recently that you appeared in. It had similar references to Formula One. So what we're going to post them in the comments section that anyone can look at that after the podcast today, because I thought they were very interesting. So that's for note for everyone. But let's get into the topic today, Mark. So ultimately, you know, the headline is banks can no longer rely solely on capital requirements as an indicator of their health. I think it's probably worth starting with a recap. Let's pick LCR. So can you explain what LCR is and, more importantly, I guess, its purpose?
Sure. I mean, obviously, LCR and kind of the kind of the whole kind of sound liquidity risk management principles came on the back of the financial crisis way back in kind of 2008. And of course, the financial crisis that started and began kind of the year or the 2 years really preceding that, the likes of kind of Bear Stearns, Northern Rock, Lehman Brothers. And of course, it was a completely different world then, where the idea that, you know, if you hold enough high quality assets for 30 days, you'd protect your customers in time of stress. Obviously, the world is a little bit different today.
Perfect. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting was Credit Suisse and SVB, right? They both failed. But as I understand it, they met or exceeded their minimum thresholds. I think Credit Suisse's LCR was 154% plus, SVB's would have been about 150%. So if you look at that ratio, it's fine, but they still failed. So it should indicate you're okay, but they weren't. So, you know, what What's your view on the problem as it was or is it lack of complacency or understanding, poor capabilities? What's the underlying problem? Because they shouldn't have failed.
Well, again, it goes back to kind of what's this really about? So what it's really about is, you know, kind of protecting yourself in a time of stress. I mean, you could argue it's a bit of a plaster. But actually, I think if you kind of go back to when this kind of thinking around LCR and sound principles came into play, it was a completely different world. I mean, we were talking about, you know, Robert Preston at 9 o'clock on a Friday night talking about Northern Rock and its failure. People then tried to hit a website that didn't have a capacity that was more than a couple of hundred. And so that website failed. And I happened to be up at Northern Rock the following Monday morning. I was there, and actually, what am I doing there? I'm sitting there with a piece of chalk. And we're talking about how we put a piece of chalk on the floor of branches so that people don't queue outside the doors. But it doesn't create something on the news as the social media of its day. You know, we were looking at trying to procure check machines so that you could pay 700,000 customers by check. Of course, the world today is a very different place. You know, we've got social media, you know, 24/7 banking. It's a very different place, as well as a very different kind of political environment as well. And I think as a result of that, we really need to look at a different way of how we view liquidity and how we look at the challenge that it presents in this world, given the examples that you've provided and how quickly those things occur. So to me, the key thing is here is how does an organization protect itself? And to me, the best protection is to try and anticipate the changes. And that really means having the right capabilities and the right risk framework to challenge and be able to kind of think through the scenarios that may impact an organization in various, you know, in various scenarios, various situations.
Yeah, I think, Marlo, we've talked on this podcast many times that Northern Rock, when that failed, it seemed to fail really quickly, but actually it took forever if you look at what happened to SVB, which is a matter of days. And, you know, given what the regulator should be doing, thinking about some quarters have heard that maybe there's likely to be an increase in capital increasing in those needs. But given what you've said and what we've heard, is that really an answer? It can't just be that. It must be more things than that, right?
Yeah, I agreed. I mean, there's talk in the US for the regional banks, you know, facing headwinds on the capital front. But to me, and I guess to us, you know, holding capital, it helps, obviously. You know, it kind of protects, you know, provides a little bit of financial stability, kind of protects your, you know, your investors and your customers. But again, I'll go back to the sticking plaster analogy. You know, you're putting a sticking plaster on a wound. Surely the idea is actually prevent that wound occurring in the first place. And again, I'll come back to the concept. Really, it's about the real challenges. Do organizations have the capabilities to manage that risk in an agile way in today's world? You know, as I say, that world has changed enormously from when LCR and the sound principles of risk management came out. You know, particularly when we're starting to think about that interconnection of risks, you know, the interconnection of, you know, insurer risk into liquidity risk, all being fueled potentially by things like social media. So how do you understand that interconnection and then understand the wider balance sheet impact? You know, I think that's a really important thing. Yeah. I also think from an organisational perspective, that organisations would really prefer a bit more of a steer from regulators, just to understand what good looks like from a capability perspective. Because, of course, there's lots of regulation around, you know, what you need to hold by way of buffers, but less thought around, you know, the capability side, except in the form of you'll get an add-on of some form. Now, we know that's starting to come out because you've got in the US, you've got kind of the FBI, you know, the FBOs in the US are expecting to receive a letter from the Fed, and that is talking about, you know, improving capabilities around BAU and stress, and that, of course, includes intraday. And also we're hearing from, you know, from Europe that, you know, there's likely to be, again, capability reviews and the expectation on, you know, focusing again on intraday. And I think these are important things. Again, in the UK, you know, there's been recent things on the insurance industry with the insurance roundtable looking at liquidity risk reporting. And, you know, I think it's about how you get that guidance from the regulator to support that.
No, I agree. One thing you picked on, and then we'll just come to a few questions that have been asked. You mentioned interconnection. So this isn't just about the banks, it's the entire network and how they all interplay and the risk that comes across that piece, right?
Absolutely. You've seen it in terms of resolution assessment frameworks when you're thinking about your organisation, but also how you're impacting with third parties, be that, you know, kind of market infrastructure and other parts of it. But equally, you're looking at the interconnections in terms of you as an organisation. So there's the macro and the micro impact. So you as an organisation, how are you impacted by your perception on social media? You know, whatever things around you may impact you as a business, and what do you do about that?
Got it. So if I just look, there's some comments and questions come in from Nick Mills. There's a question and a point being made. Wrong miss of assets, i.e. lack of high quality liquid assets in the portfolio, and poor operational process equals very difficult to liquidize these quickly and efficiently, particularly as the haircuts on liquid assets will be significant. Really good point. And then Dan Feeney, Mark, as we move from batch to real time, will the banks need a reinsurance model as used in the insurance industry, which you touched on, to backstop natural disasters or cyber attacks? It seems the government backstop is still not enough protection given last year's digital bank runs.
That's probably above my pay grade. I think it is. I mean, if you start to look about it, you know, again, about how one organization can cause some kind of potential domino effect, or at least it impacts the wider economy. You know, reinsurance for years obviously laid out that risk to a whole wider set of participants. Again, particularly when you're looking at kind of smaller banks, at the impact there, how could they lay off their risk to others? Because I think if you come back to the idea that, you know, in a world where there is stress, you know, how do you then manage that? Because ultimately, you know, you're looking at assets that may appear liquid, but of course, the moment you enter that stress, they become illiquid. So valuations, how you look at that is, you know, it's an important part of it. And of course, you know, central banks have stood behind, you know, both banks and insurers, particularly during the LDI crisis and the Dash for Cash, you know, they've stood behind them. So is there a need that central banks, should they always be doing that? Or is there a different kind of less government funded solution, such as a kind of a reinsurance model?
No, got it. And so, look, let's start to talk about the capabilities you need and how they can help. I remember when we started off Planix all those years ago, banks were talking to us just about visibility, intraday, end of day. And then it moved to, you know, I need a little bit more than that, more real time. Then it started to talk about stress and then stress scenarios. So, you know, it's not just about the number, right? It's about the capabilities you need to know the number, forecast the number, get insight, and have the capabilities to react to that as well. Can you elaborate on the thoughts of the capabilities that you think you need and what's needed by the firms today?
Sure. I mean, people talk a lot about kind of AI and robotics. You know, obviously, clearly these need to be part of the solution, but they're still relatively in that kind of infancy or use of. To me, it's almost that lovely phrase of kind of back to basics, but it's really about, you know, have you identified all those potential sources of risk and how they interact with each other, you know, and actually what potential next source of risk is as well. And then you start to kind of build on that and okay, what then happens in your first line of defense? So your first line of defense to me is, you know, is your intraday movements. So what's happening intraday? Because things do happen 24/7. So they occur during the day. How do you deal with that given the speed of movements? Because to me, you know, having a good set of monitoring and early warning cases around that is really your canary in the coal mine. That to me is a key thing. And if you can understand that, you'll start to understand, you know, patterns in changes of overall behavior of your customers, your counterparties. And then you want to start to overlay that with things like sales forecast, economic and market indicators. I mean, these are the obvious kind of starting points for, you know, for any form of capability and development of capability. And then, of course, you know, the world in which we live in a world where sentiment and perception are all important. Yeah. How do you build those in? And that's great, but of course, you need to be confident in your data, its relevance and its reliability, something that I'm not sure organisations necessarily are. There's a couple of other things as well, because I think once you then start to get confident with that, you know, I think you then might want to start to think about things like, you know, narrative-based scenarios. You know, which then start to build out those material impacts on your balance sheet, and then you can start to think about how you would react. And I think a lot of this is obviously done as part of things like recovery planning, part of, you know, resolution assessment frameworks.
Yeah.
But I think to me, it's then about taking that next step, having identified all these things, how you then start to use it to then identify the gaps in your tooling and your data to kind of build upon that, rather than try and fix what's already there. How do you then start to build and develop your capabilities? That to me is a really important thing.
No, I agree, Lloyd. And it's about the capabilities you have, the insight you need, what to do about it. And then there's the how you react to the marketplace and your customers as well. So there's social media, which, you know, you can last no more than 24 hours on that these days. But also, we heard about one bank, I won't say who, during one of the crises, they started to pay earlier in the day because people were having some thoughts about them that they could be in trouble. So they started paying earlier in the day to get the perception that actually everything was fine. Whereas actually it was the opposite. They started to pay early because they didn't want people to think there was a problem. So it's not just having the insight and actually acting on it. You've got to think of the whole remit and how it's perceived to the marketplace as well.
Absolutely. Back to that perception point. Really important.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. So just to be clear, right, you're not saying it's not just the number. That's important. You need to have a handle on that. The buffer, how you optimize that is important, but there's a lot more to it than that. The buffer is protection, but you need a lot more in your armory today than you did years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the buffer is clearly important. It offers you protection and say it's a plaster when something goes wrong, but ultimately experience tells us, and obviously, you know, what happened in the last year tells us it doesn't save you. You know, what does save you is having the right capability in place.
And do you think, when the regulator comes on and they give you add-ons, because they kind of risk adjust for what you have to hold, is that a crude way to incentivize a bank or to risk adjust from a regulation point of view, or is that the best vehicle that a regulator ultimately has? They can ask you to do everything, but ultimately, is there a tool set to just provide you these add-ons? Is that still the world we're in?
Well, I mean, you know, when you come think about the buffer, it's made up of obviously BAU stress and the add-on, and the add-on is that kind of that component that really kind of links into capability. But the downside of it, of course, is that you might improve all your capabilities, but you might not get your add-on reduction for another, you know, 12, 18 months after it. So you spent all that money improving it all, and you don't actually receive the benefit from the regulator in terms of, you know, reduced buffer requirement for a time after it. I think that kind of needs to change.
Yeah. Try and work it out up front. Prove over a period of time that you've got control, and then you won't get them in the first place, I guess, is what we're saying.
Absolutely. You know, the add-ons obviously generally sized by capabilities, and, you know, they'll be increased if your capabilities get reduced. But obviously, if you improve them, you know, there's a reduction there for you. But I think, to me, it's about how the regulator kind of introduces that reduction more quickly, so it incentivizes firms to kind of develop them. I don't
got it. Mark. So, you know, from a benefits case, we're always raising that on these podcasts. So, if I'm a firm, right, and I'm looking at this, there's things I have to do. But from a benefits point of view, what else aids clients? You know, from a monetary point of view, what helps them? What they can put in the plus point?
Well, again, I guess you talk about a lot of this, and it sounds a bit like the doomsday. So why do you have all this? It's to kind of prevent you from failing, you know, mitigate your risk. But I mean, to me, there's a bunch of other kind of very beneficial things. I mean, you gave the example earlier on about the organization that had, you know, changed its perception by using that data and paying earlier. You know, to me, if you get your right intraday capabilities there, you know, you can start to understand your customers' behavior. You can actually understand almost the other side of that, which is, okay, which customers are starting to pay later in the day? Do I need to be worried about them? You know, what do I need to think about in terms of how I might price funding to various clients? Because maybe they pay me earlier. I can incentivize them for paying me earlier in the day rather than later in the day, because that helps me. And maybe I you know, charge them a little bit less on the margin because they're paying me earlier. You know, I can then start to feedback information back into my transaction banking business, my investment banking businesses, you know, and my deposit businesses around, okay, what's happening around customers a little more readily than I possibly do at the moment. These kind of things I think are really important.
Yeah, I'm just wondering back to your AI point. You know, Planet, we use AI to help us with a partner to forecast payments, and it's very accurate, it's very good. But I was wondering if there's a world where AI, a bit like the Terminator, right? It's controlling everything. So ultimately, it's not just your insight and acting on that, but it's actually what you do about it, sentiment, looking at social media, and you know, almost handing control. But is AI there yet, or do you think it's heading that way, or is it always going to need the human to ultimately have the hand on the tiller?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of AI, it's obviously it is heading that way. I mean, interestingly enough, I mean, I was talking a little bit earlier about kind of the scenarios. I tapped in a bunch of stuff into ChatGPT to kind of work out a scenario narrative. You know, I put in kind of what's happening in terms of the politics this year, with obviously was it something like 41 elections across the globe, you know, the UK, the US being prominent amongst them, you know, and then you put in the geopolitical situation as well, you know, what's happening in various parts of the world, and then you start to put in kind of market figures, and all of a sudden you plot that into ChatGPT, and it does give you quite an interesting scenario back that you can then kind of tailored to your specific needs. So I think you can start to use it. I think the question then is, you know, whether you end up in that Terminator scenario of it running your life. To me, it's about what will it do for you, or what it should be doing is, shall we say, taking less material decisions for you, but actually placing the most material decisions to you with a series of options around what you should do, and also providing you with plausible scenarios around that. So more supporting the decision maker rather than making the decisions, you know, supporting the analysis, helping think through, collate the data, build upon that data, look for gaps in it, anomalies, etc. All that side of things, which I think is really important. And that I think work as individuals.
No, I was just thinking actually with the insight that we provide, we do reporting, tooling, AI, and so on. But one of the things we've experimented with recently is putting ChatGPT on top. And I'm just envisioning a scenario with a regulator where you run them through your outputs and you say, well, ChatGPT said this, so I it must be fine. And if they heard that from every regulator, how they'd feel, because I'm sure it's going to give them a similar answer. But maybe that's one for the future. You might not get a great answer from the regulator on that.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We ran a survey recently of like at least 500 CFOs and treasurers. And it was something like, I can't remember the percentage, but there was a large percentage told us, you know, they had the right plans and contingencies in place. And then we run all their other answers through, you know, an AI.
Yeah.
And actually, the answer it gave us on the AI side was as confident as their answers were around they had plans in place. All the other answers they provided us told us they may not have been entirely, I wouldn't say the word on it, but their perception of having plans in place versus the reality was slightly different. Because GPT analyzes all that data.
We digress, but it's a very interesting topic. Nick Miles again mentioning that it's a good point here that Nick raises. First line of defense, typically the risk function in the past, but actually treasury and ops can get you that very early insight that you need. So risk, deal with it, but actually treasury and ops can spot that first. And I think when we talk to banks, it's absolutely true. Insights can quite often come through operations and treasury. They could see it first. I'm not talking about social media, but payments being late or the risk increasing. But ultimately, it's risk that would typically that be the first line of defense. One of the points, Mark, which I've kind of worked out through this podcast is, if you've got the right tools and capabilities in place, actually business as usual and stress, they're virtually the same thing. So rewind 4 or 5 years, you had business as usual, proving what you can do and that you had insight and control. Now business as usual is about looking at stress scenarios and building them into your plan. It's not just something sat at the side. Is that correct?
If you build it in, the first organization can see a challenge or an opportunity, you know, and then, you know, combine that with agility to kind of react to it, because, you know, it's great having the tools, but then you need the governance structure, you know, the processes around that and the people then to be able to act and, you know, take advantage of it, or, you know, act against the risk at the earliest opportunity. I think it provides, you know, building stress into BAU gives you a number of opportunities on taking advantage of it, as well as kind of mitigating risk against your organization.
No, got it. And so if you're a bank today and you're thinking about stress and, you know, how you get the right insight, how you react, How should they think about building stress scenarios? So how do they build them? I know we have some customers in Europe, Mark, in the ECB, they have a number of stress scenarios that they, you know, they advise a bank should adhere to. But in terms of, is it the regulator? Is it them specifically? How would they build those scenarios up? And what's the best way to build the capabilities you need for those scenarios?
To me, I begin with kind of war gaming. I mean, they'll know the organization's best. So war game those scenarios, you know, think through the events that might impact them. You know, as I said before, I was working for, you know, another organization, and I kind of played around with ChatGPT. Once I'd kind of been through the variables, I used that as my leverage point. You know, it's free. You can play around with it. You know, I fed that into it. And that, as I say, gave me a starting point of a narrative that was then, right, then it kind of adapted to that organization. You know, once you've kind of got that as your starting point, you want to just think through, you know, the events that occur during that narrative. You know, how quickly could you react? What tools, what data, what information, what governance communications you want around that? And then also kind of building on that, how do you think about, you might need to improve your reaction time and your agility to react if you don't have those things in place? That then allows you to start to think through how to build out a plan, you know, how to think through what data you might need to clean up, what data you might need to acquire, how you might prioritize certain actions around it, as well as identify the necessary tooling. Okay. And I'm sure, again, that, you know, a number of organizations look at this as part of, you know, developing existing stress tests, recovery plans, and as part of their resolution assessment frameworks. But to me, the question is, and of course, you mentioned it, is that the question is really around, okay, great, you've been through that, let's call it regulatory exercise. How much are you using that to inform your BAU and embed it in your BAU, as well as inform your future thinking about how your organization develops its tooling?
Got it. And you think, you know, if you've got great insight, great tooling, do you think there's ever a case to go the other way, which is if you're great at this, you could ever drop below 100% on LCR or reduce 30 days to less? Or do you think it's always heading one way?
Well, again, a plaster is always helpful. You know, I think to my mind, you know, you're always going to need some kind of buffer. Again, you're thinking about kind of financial stability. You're thinking about protecting customers. So I think there'll always be a need for, you know, some kind of a buffer. But to my mind, again, it's the idea of this is about preventing yourself from using that. So there's going to be a buffer. Now, the question then becomes about whether you can recalibrate it. And whether it's too, you know, it penalizes organizations too much, and whether you can deploy it in a different way. So to my mind, if there's more of a focus on capability, then hopefully that means that, you know, all that money that sits there in buffers can then be deployed in a better way, you know, a better way for, you know, generating, you know, additional yield for organizations, as well as, you know, ultimately, if you think about it altruistically, you know, better value for the economy, because it's then back washing out into the economy again.
I get it. Right. So, running out of time, Mark, but one final question. If you were to give one takeaway for the audience today, what would it be?
I think to me, it really is about this kind of focus on capability. You know, I think the right tools, in my mind, don't just protect the organization against, you know, external and potentially internal threats, but also it will generate revenue opportunities. You make money from volatility. If you can spot that volatility early, react to it, you'll start to make money. And of course, that then links back into things like, you know, improved customer pricing. And as I said before, kind of, you know, feedback to your trading teams, your investment teams, your transaction banking teams, business teams, etc. And of course, allows you then to think more granularly about how you attribute those funding costs based upon usage. So that to me is a real kind of benefit of actually having that right capability in place.
Got it. Perfect. So yeah, it's not just about risk. It's also about opportunity as well. So if you save that money, how can you deploy it, get a high yield elsewhere, and deploy it to other parts of the firm.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Brilliant. Well, look, Mark, thanks very much. We're running out of time today. If anyone has any more questions, please send them through. We can answer them after the podcast. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast today. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much. Look out for our next podcast. If you look in the comments section, you'll see it there on the 23rd of May. Look forward to that. My name's Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in today, and goodbye. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.